south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, a couple of emails first, then we'll get right back into the solar stuff, if we even get that far today. Got a lot of stuff to go over unrelated to solar. I know. Some people think the solar stuff's very boring. That's why I'm just slipping it in here and there. That's why I'm spicing it up with a lot of other good, bad, and ugly stuff happening here in Latin America. Like, for example, how about this email? This one's from Scott. He says, "Hi, Johnny. The other day, you were talking about U.S. presidential crime families. You listed a few, but didn't mention the Trumps. Certainly, they qualify in a big way. Why leave them out?" Well, Scott, you know, a lot of presidents came from crime families, like the Kennedys. You know, Joe Kennedy made all his dough with illegal booze, which doesn't sound like such a high crime in itself. But, you know, during Prohibition, thousands of people got bumped off. That was the way they did business back in the Prohibition days. When you ran illegal booze in a big way, a lot of times it was coitants for the competition. Even in the very early days of the U.S., presidents were corrupt. You could talk about high and low crimes, too. High crimes being murder or government-sanctioned homicide, like you have with unjust wars like Vietnam, which Nixon and Johnson escalated on a huge scale just to feed that beast Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. So besides all the unknown and hidden criminal activities presidents are involved in, almost all could technically be considered war criminals. That includes Obama, the killer drone king, and the Bushes, too, in a big-time family way. Look, Bush Sr.'s father, Prescott Bush, he was called Hitler's banker. Then there's the Clintons and their unprecedented body count that's been documented by many a good journalist. Now, as for Trump, I'm sure he's guilty of many financial crimes. That's par for the course when you're talking about the levels of business he was involved in. But as for Trump and high crimes of murder and sanctioning unjust illegal wars, he's just a tenderfoot. He hasn't been in politics or office long enough to exercise that kind of muscle. It doesn't look like Trump's that kind of a two-faced smiling snake, that kind of a sociopath. Oh, he's super flawed, all right, but in no way as slick as Willie or Obama, or in no way connected to the dark side as much as the Bushes. Oh, he lies and is a certain kind of sociopath himself. I mean, you don't get to be president in the media age of the retired Asians if you're not. So it looks like since the 1950s, anyway, the only clean or fairly unblemished presidents we've had have been Truman, Eisenhower, Jimmy Carter, and Gerry Ford. And Jimmy Carter, probably the purest of them, was a do-gooder. Nothing wrong with that. He's one guy they've never been able to dig up any dirt on. Except once in an interview in Playboy, which was a big thing in itself, he said occasionally he lusted after women, but only in his heart. Well, Jimmy, like the song says, you can't go to jail for what you're thinking. But the way things are going in the States, that'll soon change. Then there was Gerald Ford. Who even remembers that guy? I know history will remember him as the guy who could only be found on the golf course and who couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. So since Kennedy, anyway, you've got two presidents with fairly unblemished records when it comes to the real behind closed doors nasty stuff. At least with Carter and Ford, there was no murder, subterfuge, or the abuse of power. Well, anyway, in a half century, nothing's been dug up on him yet. But that ain't saying much, is it? When you think about it, that's a very terrible legacy for the U.S. presidency, isn't it? That's just two presidents out of 10 in the last half century, 50 years, that come out looking fairly good. At least they don't seem to be slick, sociopathic con men like the rest of them. Though the jury's out on Bush Jr. being a sociopath, because all the scientific journals point out it requires at least an 80 IQ. So if it's true that 80% of U.S. presidents in the last 50 years were sociopathic scumballs, then you hear the U.S. being supposedly the greatest nation in the world. What does that tell you? Well, it tells you you get the malignant pus bags you deserve. Hell, you voted for them. Now, of course, you'd expect third world countries like in Latin America to have malignant, fat-ass, lard-brained pus balls as politicians, and they are. but not the U.S., that so-called shining example of truth, justice, and humanity? Well, that's damn good PR. The Latinos certainly believe that. As one Latino Uber driver told me just recently, he said, "I don't get it. All those Latinos in those illegal caravans absolutely hate Trump, but they're dying to get to Trump's America." So it really is true. You get the politicians you deserve. Whereas for me, the last guy I voted for was Ross Perot, you know, that big sucking sound? And after he lost, I voted all right, with my feet. Speaking of voting with your feet, this one comes from Joel in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He says, "Johnny, I'm in the United States and I found out it's almost impossible to hide or protect your assets when being sued. I've been there myself. I've been in court. Once in a while, I do get sued. Even if you're in the right and you win, like I have in all four of my cases, it's a pain in the ass and there's nothing fun about it. It breeds a kind of anxiety I never had when I first started out 20 or 30 years ago. You know, you get that sinking feeling when you look through your snail mail or you get something with a legal or government logo in the return address. For a minute, as you're opening it, you're thinking, oh no, I hope this isn't a lawsuit. At least that's the feeling that comes over me. When I first started my business in 1980, I had no such feelings of impending doom. Never just going to the mailbox. You know, Johnny, I just hate living like this. Speaking of getting sued, getting divorced is even worse. At least with the small lawsuits I've been involved with, I let my lawyer handle it and eventually they went away. Lawsuits do end. Divorces don't. And if you have kids, I'll tell you, Johnny, divorces extend beyond the grave. Even if, like me, you went through a bad one 10 years or so ago, and as they say, time heals all wounds and all that, problem is with a divorce, even if you move 1,000 miles away from each other, there will be times you'll see him or her again. For the kids' sake. Graduation, Christmas, birthdays, bar mitzvahs. Then there's parties with common friends and funerals you're bound to run into your ex. Well, Johnny, the point is, you talk about voting with your feet. Boy, am I ready to do that, and I've been saving up. I've got around $360,000 in cash, not including a house, which I'll be selling. I'm 52, so Social Security won't kick in for another 10 years. The truth be told, I thought I was going to be able to stick it out till 62 to get Social Security, but something tragic happened to my brother. Tragedy for him, a real wake-up call for me. My brother was sued last year, and it's not over yet. And he's a guy with quite a few assets, fully paid for a house, summer cottage, a boat, a few hundred grand in the bank, doing very well. Until the lawsuit that cut him down at the ripe old age of 49. They locked down his bank accounts. They're still locked down a year later. And I had to loan him the dough to get on with his life. And to say that lawsuit screwed up his life is an understatement. He'll never be the same. It looks like this thing's going to drag out till he's completely broke. A very bad ending for a man who was always upbeat, happy, the life of the party, a really good guy. The whole thing came out of the blue. He wasn't expecting at all. It was a sucker punch, physically and psychologically. So at 49, basically his life is done. And the other day, we had a little powwow. The plan is for me to put my boots on the ground retirement plan on steroids and do it this year. And when I get down and settled in Latin America, send for my broke brother, provided they let him out of the country with those lawsuits still pending. So my general question is, Johnny, I was hoping if I came to your expat seminar, you could give me some good hints on how to liquidate my assets up in the States and get them out of Dodge. Because now, as you might imagine, I'm hypersensitive about lawsuits and losing it all. My brother's the perfect example of how the hammer can fall at any time. That said, by now, Johnny, if you're still with me, I'm sure you're curious as to what happened to my brother and why he got sued, why he's broke. It was bad luck, worse than bad luck, but that can happen to any one of us. Almost a year ago, he was driving home from a 4th of July party. The guy in front of him got in an accident, and my brother slammed on the brakes and rear-ended him. And when the cops and the ambulance came and they took a couple people to the hospital, turns out my brother had food and a cooler full of booze in the back seat. Unopened booze, too. A couple of bottles broke. The car smelled like a brewery. My brother's alcohol test put him under the limit, so he was legally off the hook, except for the fact that the guy in the car he slammed into is now paralyzed. So this guy's going to need perpetual home and nursing care, etc. And over his lifetime, that's big money. So Ever since then, the lawyers have been hovering like vultures. Even though everyone had car insurance, they're specifically hitting on my brother. Even though the main accident had already taken place and he just came in at the tail end of it. Do you know why they're nailing him? Have you figured it out? Because according to U.S. law, if you rear-end anyone, no matter what the conditions or what happens in front of you, you're at fault. And believe me, Johnny, this thing could go on forever. There were 4 cars involved in that accident. Oh, but it gets worse and we're not even at the final chapter yet. My brother, who got a shattered knee out of it, is now addicted to opioids and antidepressants. He was on no meds before the accident. That's all come since. So he's got a shattered knee, he's addicted to opioids and antidepressants, and they locked up all his bank accounts. So Johnny, before I babble on anymore, I need some advice. One, if I come down to your seminar, will I find out how to protect my own assets? Will you show me how to get them out of Dodge safely? I really do worry about that. Just the thought of wire transferring a few $100,000 to a Latin bank, it's something I've never done before. Though I'm sure people do it all the time, I've never done it, not once. In other words, I will need some hand-holding. Question number 2. How long can I live a nice, decent life in Latin America on $360,000? I guess what I'm really asking is, will it last 10 years till my Social Security kicks in? Because I understand from what you said, once you're on Social Security, you can have it direct deposited to any bank account in the world. That's right. I looked it up myself. How about it, Johnny? Signed, Twin City Joel. Wow, sorry about your brother. By the way, Joel, who would have thought things could get that bad up in Minneapolis, Minnesota? When I was growing up in Chicago, we all thought of Minneapolis, which wasn't that far away, maybe a 6-7 hour drive. We always thought of it, and northern Wisconsin, as the U.S. version of Canada, you know, moose and all that. I don't mean today's Canada, which is really f***ed up. I'm talking about the 60s, 70s, and 80s version of Canada. By the way, just one thing about Canada. I remember in 1964 when my uncle told me to start saving silver dimes and quarters because they're going to go away and be worth a lot of money. They were switching over to copper and nickel sandwich coins instead. Man, were we kids excited when we saw the first ones. We were real stupid, too. Who'd have thunk it was the beginning of the end of real money? Well, I did that. I took my uncle's advice. By the way, he gave me a $20 roll of quarters and said, go down to the bank every Saturday morning and open that roll and pull out the remaining silver ones for yourself. He said there might be just 2 or 3, but save them and replace them with the new sandwich ones. And when you get old, in your 30s or so, you'll thank me. He was a silver and gold bug way back in the 50s and 60s. Boy, was he right. And what a savings account I built up as a little kid. And you know, it lasted a while. Till about 1970, I'd still find 1 or 2 silver coins in every roll of quarters. Oh, and they were very easy to spot. You just tear the paper off the roll, and the silver ones stood out. They were, well, silver-looking, and the other ones were a copper-nickel mix. So what's that got to do with anything? Well, the U.S. pulled silver out of their coinage starting in 1965, with the exception being the Kennedy half dollars, which had 40% silver for the next couple years. Get this. The Canadians didn't pull silver out of their coinage till 1967. So, for years, the occasional Canadian quarter, dime, whatever, would show up in your change. But 99% of people didn't like them because they were slightly smaller than the U.S. quarter, so they didn't fit into the pop and gumball machines. Add that to the fact Canadian dollars and the rest of their coinage was always worth about 70, 80, or 90% of the U.S. coins. But you know what? I didn't care. My uncle taught me that. He said when people have Canadian coins, you trade them a new U.S. quarter for them because the Canadians are still silver. So it really was my uncle, my godfather slash confirmation sponsor, who got me started on the track to real money. That is gold, silver, and precious metal. And if he was around today, I'm sure he'd approve of cryptos. Yep, and he was the eccentric genius in the family. They called him crazy. Oh, but that was then, not anymore. Now that he's gone, his former detractors call him a visionary. But I digress as usual. Though I always did wonder, did those Canadian coins that filtered into Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois and such, certainly because of proximity to Canada, did they ever make their way down to the southern states, Florida, Texas, Louisiana? I bet they didn't. Even though when I was a kid they were quite common in regular change, I don't think they made it down south. They were kind of a nuisance, too. They didn't fit in the pop machines, and most of the local stores wouldn't accept them. And as for us kids, well, that's all we had was change. We never had paper money, man. That was adult currency. A handful of coins was enough to make a kid feel like a king for a day. Say, do I sound like an old fart reminiscing? Sorry about that. All right, back to Joel. Yes, Joel, to answer your question, if you come down to the seminar and bring your brother, that would be good. That is, unless they've blocked his passport, which is certainly possible. You will learn all about how to transfer your assets safely and securely down to Latin America. Not only that, the whole time, you'll be hanging with our seminar lawyer, who will be glad to open a bank account for you, which is highly, if not absolutely, recommended as you go ahead with your plan B. And depending which way you go about that, you can either open an account in your name, then of course it'll all be reported back to the IRS and the U.S. Treasury Department, or you can create a Latin corporation that'll open your bank account for you, and in that case, different but much more anonymous rules will apply. And of course, everything will be legal according to Latin American law. In either case, whether you open a bank account in your own name or a corporate account, you're completely protected from lawyers, lawsuits, any kind of legal action or judgment at all coming from the states. Even if it's the heavy hand of Uncle Sam who's trying to go after you. Your Latin bank accounts can only be attached, locked up, or blocked if your bank in Latin America has a branch in the United States. Of course, if you come down to the seminar, you'll learn which banks are the safest and which ones are recommended for gringos and expats. So if opening up a bank account and getting some money out of the States is your goal when coming down to the seminar, our seminar lawyer will make it happen and hold your hand through the process. All right. Then Joel, in his email, also asks if $360,000, I assume in cash, would be enough to last him, I think it is 10 years until he starts collecting Social Security. Well, Joel, first you're going to have to ditch the idea of the cost of living as you know it up in the first world. Because, for example, if up in Chicago or New York or Cleveland, it costs $50,000 a year for a single person to live, a nice middle-class life, though that may be an underestimate, might be 60 or 70, geez, I don't know. Of course, if you live in a small town or out in the boonies, it's going to be less. But down here in Latin America, and you've heard me say this so many times on the show, and of course, we go into great detail on the cost of living at the seminar. You should easily be able to live the same kind of lifestyle you're living up in the States right now for about a third to a half of the cost. That means a single person will do fine on a nice average Social Security check of $1,200 to $1,500 a month. Oh, and one more thing about estimating the cost of living. Some of those well-known rags like International Living, they'll tell you can live for $700 a month in Costa Rica, Ecuador, Panama, whatever. That's the bait they hook you with. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not going to happen unless you're the type that is constantly searching out deals and you're kind of a tightwad. Though I do know people living on $500 to $700 a month down here, and they live like trailer trash, which is just fine for some people who grew up in trailer trash, like expat Eddie. But as for me, I want to live like a first world person does up in the States. That's going to take $1,000 to $1,500 a month. And that's if you're living off the gringo tourist trail. Of course, if you want to live smack dab on the gringo tourist trail in Mexico, Costa Rica, Panama, or any place there are hordes of tourists, you'll pay a lot more, especially when it comes to rent. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, Joel, you're a young enough guy, 52. That means you've got a couple of nice big chapters left in your life. Maybe a whole new book and a whole new career, because people who come down here to Latin America have lots of time on their hands. Yep, it's true, and it happens all the time with gringos and expats. If you've got ambition and a few ideas, which you surely do if you've got a business up in the States, it won't take long, probably only a couple of months, before you see more than a few interesting niches that you might want to take a shot at. So look out, Joel, you might be heading into a second career and don't even know it. Not that you necessarily need another career, but you have to have something to do besides eat, drink, and be merry. Sometimes, you know, if you got a big nest egg, like $360,000 just sitting around, you could lose your drive and become fat and lazy. Nah, that won't happen, right? But just for grins, let's assume the worst case. You sit around on your duff all day watching the sunset and drinking beer. Suppose then you allot $20,000 a year for your living expenses. That $360,000 of yours, if inflation doesn't eat a big hole in it, should keep you in beer and tacos for over 15 years. Like you said, after 10, Social Security will kick in, but who knows if that'll be any good either. My point, $360,000 is a very nice cushion to come down to Latin America with. In fact, most people working on their plan B would love to start out with that amount. And of course, you've got your house to sell up in the States too, and we're not even counting that. Just remember, things worldwide are changing really fast, and they're not going to get any better. You have to get that plan B going now before your government slams the door on moving your assets out. And that's just what happens when governments go broke and start panicking, which is exactly where the U.S. government is poised right now. Just remember, the U.S. is the biggest debtor nation in the world. In fact, the biggest debtor nation of all time. Question is, how long do you think it's going to take before the U.S. government decides to put an exit tax on money flowing out of the states? That wouldn't be a precedent. There are other less indebted countries doing that, you know. Meaning, it's time to get the hell out of Dodge. But as anyone who's working on a plan B will tell you, it takes a lot of time, effort, and sometimes a few false starts. That's why I started doing my expat insider seminars, to give you a big head start on your plan B and the confidence to see it through. My next one is in July. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on the seminar link, and get ready to drink from the fire hose. Oh, and remember the last day to get in on those early bird discounts, that's $500 savings per person, is June 1st. So keep that in mind. Don't dawdle. Oh, and speaking of jobs for gringos and expats when they get down, man, there are a couple of niches that definitely need to be filled. Don't laugh when I tell you this, but there's a definite need for dog walkers, dog sitters, and house sitters. Those are jobs that are just perfect for certain gringos and expats, and I'll tell you why. The fact is, most gringos and expats who move down have a house and a pet or two. Now, if you've got a pretty good spread with a nice big garden and such, you might have a live-in cleaning lady, or a maintenance guy slash gardener who comes every day or maybe once or twice a week. Then when you go away for any length of time, they'll take care of your house and walk your dogs, cats, and Gila monsters. However, if you live in a small house or apartment and don't have a garden, you might not have a full-time cleaning lady or a maintenance guy at all. Then what most people do if they have pets is they drop them off at the vet, but that is not an ideal solution, believe me. Then there's a good chance they're stuck in a cage for days or even weeks and only go out for a walk maybe once a day. Now, would it be nice if you had a gringo or gringo couple house sit and take care of your animals too? Now, short term, you could always have your cleaning lady watch your house. But believe me, again, that's not a good solution if you're going to be gone weeks or months at a time. Remember, she's got a family too. So she'll be ducking out and checking back in at her house once in a while, or she'll bring drunken Uncle Tulio and the snot-nosed kids around your house to mung up your beds and bathrooms and furniture. That will happen, you know. Man, does that sound classist or what? Hey, I'm just telling it like it is. Have you ever seen living room furniture in perfect or even good shape in the average Latin person's house? In gringo houses, yes, but in most Latinos houses, uh-uh. Problem is, Latin folks have a little dog and pet problem. They never train them, so they have the run of the house, the furniture and beds too, and they don't often pee and crap where they're supposed to. Of course, there are always exceptions, but I haven't seen too many yet. Now, if you were living in Latin America and had a dog or two, if you're going away for a while, even if you don't want somebody house-sitting, wouldn't you like to be able to call up someone, a gringo or gringa specifically, who will come over and walk your dog? In fact, I'm looking at this internet posting out of the 90210 zip code in Beverly Hills, I think that is, California. It says there's a 24-year-old girl named Daisy who gets paid $500 per dog per day to walk 8 dogs. Long story short, she's making over $1 million a year watching rich people's dogs in L.A. I know that's crazy and hard to believe, but it's true. Of course, you're never going to make that kind of dough dog walking anywhere else. But here in Latin America, in every medium and large city, there are very wealthy pockets of individuals. And I'm always seeing someone, usually a gardener or cleaning lady type, walking 2 or 3 dogs who have wealthy owners. You could tell by the leashes, collars, trinkets, and the look of the dogs themselves, how well they're kept up, that their owners are rich and they're paying someone to walk them every day. In fact, I know some wealthy Latinos who do have people walk their dogs, and man, would it be a feather in their hat if they could have a gringo or a gringa doing that job instead of the cleaning lady. Let's face it, here in Latin America, it's all about the show, you know? Won't the neighbors be jealous? What I'm saying is, as far as dog walkers, dog sitters, and house sitters, you've got the gringo advantage going for you in many ways because we're always considered more trustworthy. We treat our pets very well. We've got high standards and high hygienic standards too. Compared, of course, to cleaning ladies and maintenance guys who sometimes don't even buy dog food for their own dogs and cats. They just let them out to scavenge. And they look and smell the part too. That's why I think it's a golden opportunity to house sit, pet sit, or walk dogs. So how do you get started with that? Easy. Put yourself on OLX.com or on bulletin boards in Walmart and grocery stores in high-end neighborhoods. And as much as I hate Fakebook, I know that most gringos and expats have their local expat Fakebook groups. And of course, you'll post your pumped-up resume on Fakebook with happy smiley photos and videos of you when you're walking high-end, well-groomed mutts through expensive neighborhoods. You get the idea. The only question is, what are you going to charge? Well, if you're house-sitting, especially if it's for weeks or months at a time, you at least get free room and board out of it. I'd say just search around the net and see what people are charging. Anyway, in most cases, you'll find with gringos and expats, if they're going away on a long vacation, they would much rather hire a happy, smiley, do-gooder gringo or gringo couple to watch their home than to leave their cleaning lady or maintenance guy in charge for weeks or months at a time. Anyway, you get the idea. All right, then comes this email from Bubba. No, it can't be.
Not that Bubba.
We don't want his perverted ass down here. But who knows? He says, Johnny, I just came back from a Cuba vacation with my parents. My dad's part Cuban. He was all hot to trot, see the old homeland and the homestead his dad and grandparents got thrown off of by Uncle Fidel. Anyway, he loved it, but I didn't, and I'll tell you why. Nearly the whole population is living in the pre-internet days. The average person doesn't even have internet at home or a smartphone with 3G. And if you do have a smartphone, the service is limited, it cuts out, and it's four times as much as you pay up in the States. So then you're thinking, like every first world person would do, bring your smartphone and switch it on Wi-Fi. Who needs roaming when you've got Wi-Fi? Everything's Wi-Fi these days, right? Except it's not like in the States where there's free Wi-Fi everywhere. And the hotels, even the 3 and 4 star hotels, make you pay extra for Wi-Fi. We were staying at a very nice 4 star Havana hotel, but you didn't have Wi-Fi in the room unless you paid for it. So we did. And we still didn't get it, but there was free Wi-Fi in the lobby. Was free Wi-Fi, all right, but first, on the main page, you had to give up all your information, including a scan of your passport page. I did it, figured what the hell. Don't know how they did it, but they disabled Google, Waze, WhatsApp, and most of my other texting programs. However, I did find out from a porter that if you go to the Central Park, there are guys there selling gray market Wi-Fi keys. Only in U.S. dollars and really expensive. If you want my take on it, Cuba's great for nostalgia. But me, I don't care if I'm a quarter Cuban. I'm not going back anytime soon. All I can say is if that's the kind of life you want, hip, hip, hooray, 3 cheers for socialism, vote for Bernie.
South of
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!